Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of Politics Now. And sometimes it can be hard to cut through all the noise from the Canberra bubble. But on the Politics Now podcast, bursting it wide open is our core business. I'm joined by the brightest minds at the ABC to break down the poly speak and have a chat about what's actually going on behind the scenes. It's called Politics Now, and you can find it on ABC Listen.
From Wurundjeri Country, I'm Luke Siddham-Dunton, and today on The Breakfast Wrap, explosive reporting from Nine. It says state and federal funds for Victorian infrastructure projects are flowing to the underworld. That is despite a two-year effort to stop it. The federal opposition wants action.
Do you think all work should stop on all construction projects?
I do believe that you need to remove the corrupt elements before you can continue to give taxpayer money to these projects.
That would put a huge break on all infrastructure development in Victoria.
Well,
so you want to shut down on sites right now.
You'll hear what the Deputy Opposition Leader, Victorian Senator Jane Hume, has to say. Then, with the advent of a new political party made up of two high-profile independents, why haven't all the Teals joined in?
I think it was incredibly brave and ballsy of them.
Brave and wise or brave and crazy?
Well, time will tell.
What do you think of the name, Community Strong Australia?
I thought Competent Sheila's Australia, which is what the Batuta suggested, was a great alternative.
Melbourne independent Monique Ryan will be here too. From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap. Well, it is nice to be back with you for another week of The Breakfast Wrap. I've got to give a shout out and a thank you to Brooke Young for guiding us through the last few days of breakfast, particularly the program on Friday, our look at Western Sydney, the surging support for One Nation and also the party's efforts in that part of the world. We looked at a whole range of stories there, including how people are navigating the cost of living crisis, you know, some people turning to a community kitchen in Penrith. There was also an interview with the local federal member, Ed Husic. Plenty of interviews you can go catch up on that episode of The Breakfast Wrap, hosted by Brooke Young. But the news rolls on, and this week we've got Melissa Clark in the hosting chair for Sally Sara. And we started with this story. Overnight, the flagship investigative and current affairs program on Channel 9, 60 Minutes, added to the pressure on Victoria's Labor government. It reported that despite a two-year attempt by the Victorian government to stop taxpayer money from landing in the hands of criminals, funds were still finding their way to the underworld. The reporting revealed leaked records showing repeated payments to an underworld figure in 2025 and 2026. Now, before we hear from the federal opposition, we first spoke with a government minister, Annika Wells. She is the Minister for Communications and the Minister for Sport, and she was talking to Mel about a whole range of issues, including this one.
Should the federal government be looking at stopping funding to any of these projects until it's all sorted out?
Look, I will defer to my colleague Amanda Rishworth on the ins and outs of that because I'm not, you know, speaking to you now, Mel, across how the federal government might do that. And I'm aware that this is in the mix federally this week because we are working on the Cooperative Workplaces Bill. But I think we will always take the position that enterprise agreements should be transparent and effective. They should deliver secure jobs and fair conditions. And the federal government will always do what we can to support those.
Annika Wells there, the Minister for Communications and also the Minister for Sport. You can hear her full interview on those topics on ABC Listen. So we followed up that interview with Jane Hume. She's the deputy leader of the federal opposition, but more importantly for this story, she is a Liberal senator from Victoria. So Mel asked her what needed to happen in response to these revelations from Nine.
Well, this is a problem that's been hiding in plain sight, and the coalition, both state and federal, have been very clear from the beginning that an inquiry needs to happen. The state team are saying that it needs to be a royal commission. I would agree with that. The Commission of Inquiry in Queensland is clearly cleaning up the CFMEU's Act up there. What amazes me is that at a federal level, the Albanese government seems to not just deny, but enable. In fact, you know, just yesterday, Jim Chalmers was saying that the only reason these things had come to light was because that they had installed an administrator. Well, that's not at all true. Clearly, that's not at all true. 60 Minutes put paid to that last night. But they have also given, knowing full well that there was corruption on these bid build sites, they've given an additional $3.8 billion, I should say, to the suburban rail loop, one of the locations where this corruption was
occurring. Do you think all work should stop on all construction projects?
I do believe that you need to remove the corrupt elements before you can continue to give taxpayer money to these projects.
That would put a huge break on all infrastructure development in Victoria.
Well, it would also put a stop to the corrupt union's business model. And I think that's profoundly important.
So you want to shut down on sites right
now? Until the corruption is gone, until the crime that has been committed on these sites, whether it be drug trafficking, whether it be extortion, whether it be standover tactics, thuggery, mafia-style actions, which is what Graham Watson said, well, yes, something needs to be done. Certainly.
That would leave Victoria with a lot of half-finished infrastructure projects with not a clear end in time. Is that really a feasible course of action?
Well, is that a choice, that we should either continue on and allow the corruption to continue, or halt it and deal with it? I personally think halting it and dealing with it is the only way to do it. And the best way to deal with that would be through a Royal Commission in Victoria. But at a federal level, we've given the Albanese government an option to have an inquiry about corruption in the construction industry. And they have voted against it over and over again. Now, as recently as last week, we will put up another inquiry into corruption in the construction industry. And to be honest, if Anthony Albanese was serious about this, if he was serious about making sure that taxpayer dollars was being used effectively rather than being siphoned off to criminals, well, then he would support this inquiry.
Senator, the polling that is out today, we've got two separate lots of polling in newspapers today. In both of them, they're still terrible for the coalition. How long does Angus Taylor have to turn it around?
Well, Angus Taylor's been in the job for, I think it's about 17 weeks now. And in that period of time, we've been pretty upfront that, you know, we've got a long road to go. We know it's going to be tough. We breached trust with Australians. We knew we did it. Breaking up with, you know, the coalition breaking up twice didn't help in the last 12 months. And there's going to be an awful lot of work to do. That said, the work is being done. I think that Angus Taylor has prosecuted against this terrible Labor budget exceptionally well. He really has led the charge in that debate, even if others potentially have got some of the credit. But most importantly, he's announced policies which put stakes in the ground about where the coalition wants to take the country. Things like the tax back guarantee, so getting rid of bracket creep, a future generations fund so we can better use Australians' sovereign wealth for the benefit of the next generation of Australians. Supporting
all of
small
that policy
businesses,
work hasn't
lower,
seen,
lower energy
hasn't
prices.
Seen polling turn around. In fact, the news poll is worse today than it was when you came out and said things needed to change, that there was an existential crisis when Susan Lee was leader. So if it is even worse, is that policy work that's being led by Angus Taylor actually making a difference?
Well, I don't think that we've been shy about saying that the work needs to be done. And we're up for that task. And it's a long time until the next election. Our job is to make sure now that people can see that Angus Taylor is leading not just a credible team, but has a credible plan.
And should he get all the way to the next election to make
absolutely.
That case?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And as a Victorian member of Parliament, I know you keep a close eye on what's happening with your Victorian Liberal colleagues. We've seen another internal fight, this time over allegations from Moira Deeming that Matthew Guy, one of her colleagues, had assaulted her. Victoria Police had a look at it and found no offence. Matthew Guy wants an apology from Moira Deeming. Do you think she owes him one?
Yes, I do. I think Matthew is perfectly entitled to an apology, and Jess Wilson has reiterated that. I hope that it's forthcoming this week.
And that is the Federal Deputy Opposition Leader, Senator Jane Hume from Victoria. Well, I don't blame you if you're not entirely across this story just yet. There's so much else going on in the world, and it hasn't really been top of the headlines given all the other news around. So you could probably use some analysis from our political correspondent, Tom Crowley.
Quite a dramatic place to take it from Jane Hume, that the tools should be down. It wasn't entirely clear to me exactly for how long she was suggesting, and until the crime and corruption she suggests is dealt with. Obviously, the coalition is calling for a royal commission in Victoria or for an inquiry of some sort. Was Jane Hume suggesting that the major project should be halted until that time? unclear, and you know that would be a pretty significant development. But it's equally clear that this is a hugely damaging. I mean, that's an understatement, really, for the Victorian government. This just long series of reports from Nick McKenzie, in particular, in the Nine papers, and several more of them over the weekend, including suggestions about the government's level of understanding, its ineffectiveness of any steps that it's taken to stamp down on what does just appear to be rampant suggestion of wrongdoing across the construction sector, and then also just its knowledge and acquiescence that was suggested in some of that reporting as well. So the coalition's got a point to prosecute here at a state level, and Monique Ryan, speaking to you earlier as well, suggesting that she thought that it would be the thing that would bring down the Allan Labor government, but at a federal level as well, because federal money is going to these projects. And Jim Chalmers, the Treasurer, yesterday didn't really want to go anywhere near offering endorsement of the way that the Victorian government has handled this. The government, the federal government, does have a question to ask about whether its money is being used appropriately. And so it is a question for Anthony Albanese, and something that that Jane Hume, particularly as a Victorian senator in the employment portfolio as well, is prosecuting for them. But one of many things, I think, where she's getting a little bit distracted by questions about the polls, questions about Moira Deeming, every time that the Liberals, both on tax and on this, feel that they have something to go with, there is that distraction. She said that Angus Taylor's doing a good job. He popped up on 2GB this morning, and he, I'm sure, wanted to talk about this and tax. He just got asked about polls as well, and this is the thing that the Liberal Party keep running into. Here's what he had to say, and really what the interviewer had to say on 2GB, which is normally more of a gentle ride for Angus Taylor than some other platforms, or at least he likes to go there quite a lot. It wasn't a good morning for him this morning.
When Susan Lee was on 18%, that was the justification to move on her. And now 4 months on, Angus, we're 1 point back from that. So what does that say about your leadership?
Well, we were in free fall, obviously.
You still are.
But hang on. And we'd seen two bust-ups with the coalition. Now, the coalition is solid. We have a rotten Labor government.
I know, but this is about you, Angus. Angus, let's be clear. You know exactly what I've asked you here. You've put policies out there. You've got the coalition back together. And you're now on 17.
Yeah, and it's going to take time.
So, you know, a tough morning anytime you're going to get 17 primary in news poll for Angus Taylor. Their hope this week is that this widow's tax element of the capital gains debate can be something for them to get back onto, and that trusts as round two in the tax fight. The business groups certainly think that this will be even bigger than the fight that they've had over capital gains. And so there's more that Angus Taylor would like to be talking about, but that continues to serve as a distraction.
Yeah, Jane Hume certainly counting the number of weeks he's been in the leadership, which
17.
Is interesting. We'll keep an eye on that.
Mel Clark and Tom Crowley there, and you would have heard him mention that interview with Monique Ryan. I'll bring you more from that conversation in just a moment. Well, I'm going to pull you away from federal politics momentarily, and we're going to take a quick look at the situation in Venezuela. Hundreds of rescue workers from around the world have joined the race to find survivors of the twin earthquakes that have devastated the country in the last week. We're about 90 hours from the disaster striking, well past the golden window where some rescue experts say most people can be saved. Officials have confirmed that at least 1,450 people have now died after this magnitude 7.2 and then shortly after 7.5 earthquake struck on Wednesday local time. The second one was actually the strongest quake to hit the country in more than 100 years. And if that wasn't bad enough, there are around 50,000 people still believed to be missing. A whole number of international organisations have flown in. One of them is the US charity Direct Relief. Its chief operating officer is Craig Redmond, and he's been supporting teams in Venezuela. He told Mel what the situation was like on the ground.
Right now, it's a mad dash to try to save as many lives as possible. As you know, it's been several days now. And the fear, of course, is the likelihood of finding more people alive is diminishing over time. So right now, it's all hands on deck. Everyone's doing everything they can possibly do to find as many people as possible.
And how's that going, given there's been hundreds of aftershocks since those initial quakes on Wednesday? Is that really limiting ability to get to the rubble, search through the rubble in a safe way?
It is. You have to be, every time there's another aftershock, of course, you have to wait to see how bad is it going to be. Is it going to be something that's going to further destabilize the wreckage and make it dangerous, or can we proceed? So they're having to rethink that every time they, approach another building.
And what is the sort of rescue mission that's underway now? I mean, we've seemed to have gone past that golden window that they talk about where you're most likely to find survivors. Is this now a matter of trying to retrieve bodies, or are we still seeing some miracle stories of people still alive even after all this time?
Direct Relief is supporting several search and rescue groups, and they have canine units. And it's kind of those dogs are amazing. And you know, they're well-trained. They know exactly what they're looking for. And if there is anyone in there still, you know, they'll find them. However, you're right. It is getting, hope is dimming a bit now that we're so far into it. So now it's just a matter of trying to find any last person who might be alive, and then, of course, turning to the recovery and beginning to address, you know, what systems are shattered and how can they be built back up and supported so that they can, you know, for example, the work that Direct Relief does supporting healthcare providers with critical medicine to make sure that those hospitals and clinics can function and help people.
Craig, the United States is taking something of a leading role in this response. There's been a support in terms of financial aid and a lot of Americans coming to join the rescue efforts. We've seen a lot of other countries also send rescue teams and aid, but it seems to have taken a while for that to get off the ground. What's behind that delay?
You know, I can't say what's behind the delay. I will say this, in every emergency that I've ever been a part of, earthquakes included, it's just never fast enough, right? Even though organizations do their best to be responsive, to do everything they can to be as quick as possible, to activate system and so forth, you know, if you're a survivor of one of these horrible earthquakes or rapid onset disasters, you know, the assistance can never come fast enough, you know, and we who work in this field just feel like, how can we speed up even more? What can we do to make sure that assistance gets there faster? So the main thing that we can do at this time is support those local Venezuelan organizations, health clinics, healthcare providers, because they're the ones on the ground and they're the ones who are going to always be fastest.
And that is Craig Redmond there, the Chief Operating Officer at the American charity Direct Relief, which has been supporting teams in Venezuela. We'll be covering that story right across the week. Well, I promised you a bit of a bookend with federal politics, so here it is. Monique Ryan, the Victorian Independent, is today introducing a private member's bill into Parliament to change the date of HEX indexation from the 1st of June to the 1st of November. Now, the reason that this date is significant is because, as she's shown by releasing Parliamentary Budget Office costings, students and graduates could actually save $3.2 billion in indexation over a decade, just if this date is changed. So when she came on this morning, here is what Mel asked her about this issue.
Take me through why the HEX indexation date should be changed. Talk me through the challenges it poses for students with debts.
Well, HEX indexation is the annual adjustment to graduates' HEX debt. And it's applied, the problem is that it's currently applied before repayments from the preceding financial year are applied to graduates' accounts. That means that they've been making payments to their HEX accounts over the course of the year. They've been garnished from their pay, but they haven't actually been applied to the balance. What that means is that you end up paying indexation, which is effectively interest, on debt that you've already repaid. You wouldn't accept that on your credit card, and you wouldn't accept on your mortgage, but we're expecting graduates to basically end up paying back more than they should. And in a cost of living crisis, my feeling is that the government has created a cost of learning crisis with the cost of tertiary education in this country.
The government would point to some student debt relief measures it's already put in place, the 20% cut to debt tallies that we've seen, a change in the way the indexation is calculated to be the lowest of either CPI or wage price index. And I think we've heard Jason Clare acknowledge that there's still more to be done here. Do you have any sense of whether or not the government is willing to make the change that you're calling for here?
I asked Jason Clare about this in the House a couple of weeks ago, and he can't give us a time frame. He acknowledges the unfairness of the indexation. He's done that before. He's also acknowledged the unfairness of the Job Ready Graduate Scheme, which doubled the cost of arts, law, finance and economics degrees under Scott Morrison, but which has now been in place longer under Anthony Albanese than it was under Scott Morrison. And the problem is, if you are starting an arts degree or a law degree or a combined degree next year, you will be looking at a cost of $54,000 for an arts degree, $90,000 plus for a combined degree. And the changes that have been made thus far really don't make the significant inroads into those costs.
Again, Labor has indicated that it's aware and wants to deal with the issues around the Jobs Ready Graduates program. The government points to the fact that there's been some structural change it's put in place around the Australian Tertiary Education Commission that needs to take place first. So it seems the government is cognizant and willing to do something. Is it the timing that's really
It is absolutely the timing, and the fact that young people who finished degrees in the last few years or who are commencing degrees now are still being faced with a cost to those degrees which is excessive. Jason Clare has made some significant inroads into this, and I do believe that his heart is in the right place. But the fact is that the new Australian Tertiary Education Commission, as far as we know, has not yet been specifically tasked with the job of getting rid of job-ready graduates, and we don't have a timeline for that. We need that in this term of government.
Monique, we're seeing the government introduce gambling advertising legislation to Parliament this week. This isn't the comprehensive ban that the Murphy Report called for, but it nonetheless does seek to limit the extent of gambling advertising. Will you be supporting it when it comes to a vote?
The legislation that the government will be proposing will be inadequate. It will not protect young Australians from gambling harm. Saying that we'll only have three ads an hour instead of five or six or seven, yeah, there's no evidence that that will significantly decrease the harm to young people from gambling advertising.
As disappointed as you are, you have a decision to make about whether or not to vote for it or against it.
I can't support something that won't work. And I won't support a half measure, which looks like a wave in the right direction, but won't achieve the desired end result. And so I won't support the legislation in its current form. I couldn't do that.
We've seen some reporting on Nine newspapers and as well 60 Minutes about the attempts to clean up Victoria's Big Build program and the difficulties in doing so. It's showing that there are still large sums of money flowing from state and federally funded projects to the underworld, and payments are still being made this year, despite promises for quite some time now from the Victorian state government to clean that up. As a Victorian MP, how worried are you about these revelations?
I think that the systemic misconduct on the big build sites in Victoria will be what ultimately proves to bring down the Allan government. Yeah, we know that Geoffrey Watson estimated $15 billion worth of money have been wasted in the excessive costs on the big build sites due to the Labor government's relationship with and support of the CFMEU and its systemic corruption on those sites. I think the calls for a Royal Commission are appropriate. I think that we'll look back on this time as one where we've allowed the unions to take extraordinary advantage of Victorian people, and that's been to all of our cost.
Last week we saw other independent MPs, Allegra Spender and Zali Steggall, announce their plans to form a new political party, Community Strong Australia. What was your reluctance to joining them?
I was elected as an independent, and the people of Kooyong sent me to this place as an independent. That's the promise I made to them, and that's the promise that I intend to keep. It's a great pleasure and a privilege to represent an electorate as their representative. The parties are the problem. People are frustrated with the parties.
Do you think it was a mistake for them to band together and make a new party given that?
I think it was incredibly brave and ballsy of them. You know, to start a new party is not a small thing, and the reality is that
brave and wise or brave and crazy?
Well, time will tell. But the thing is, you know, we are complete independents and small parties are completely disadvantaged by the donation reform that the government brought in the last term of government. And we all want to have as much effect as we possibly can. So I applaud their courage and I look on with interest, but I'm very happy as an independent.
What do you think of the name, Community Strong Australia?
I thought Competent Sheila's Australia, which is what the Batuta suggested, was a great alternative.
And that is the federal independent Monique Ryan quoting one of the country's most beloved satirists, the Batuta advocate. Thank you so much for listening to the first episode of The Wrap for the week. Every interview was presented by Mel Clark, produced by the Radio National Breakfast team, and The Breakfast Wrap was today produced by Eddie Diamond. I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon. More from us right across the week.